I'm Cass Harrington, and before we jump into today's trend, here are your local and regional headlines. Vanderburg County officials unveiled a list of budget cuts for 2014 on Wednesday. The cuts taken from dozens of offices total nearly $900,000. The recorder's office saw the largest cuts of any county office, from the salaries of 6 employees who will be paid through a user fee fund within the recorder's office next year. A traveling replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. will be on display at the Grandview Ballpark in Spencer County through the weekend. The mobile memorial, called The Wall That Heals, opened to visitors on Wednesday with a ceremony and remembrance of the 9/11 attacks. A candlelit vigil is scheduled for Friday evening, and the closing ceremonies on Sunday at 3 p.m. Business leaders in Owensboro and DuBois County, Indiana, have formed a coalition to push for construction of what they are calling I-67. The road would link into I-69 near Washington, extend south through Jasper and Owensboro, and eventually connect with I-65 at Bowling Green. A privately funded study done of the Washington to Bowling Green corridor concluded the road would draw a minimum of 16,000 vehicles a day, make for safer travel, provide an alternate route south, and lead to more economic development. Fort Wayne, Indiana Mayor Tom Henry stopped by Evansville to discuss the convention hotel business with Mayor Lloyd Winicky. Fort Wayne hosted 55 conventions last year. Mayor Henry said the proximity of two hotels to the convention center was a crucial part of this business. Evansville City Council is still in the process of reviewing market research with the finance firm Crowe Horwath before it reaches a final financing decision. That's your local and regional news. Stay with me to hear what's trending on today's show. Support for the trend comes from members of the Local Programming Fund. I'm your host, Cass Harrington. To lay the groundwork for this conversation, EVSC's Director of Early Childhood Education, Terry Green, will bring us up to speed on what programs are available in Evansville and around the tri-state. She started at EVSC in January, and before that, she worked for Audubon Area Community Services Head Start in Owensboro and has taught preschool and kindergarten in Henderson. I guess starting with early childhood development, what exactly are we talking about, just to lay down the groundwork?
Okay, great. That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Actually, formally, when you talk about early childhood education and early childhood development, we are talking about children from birth through age 8. So we're actually mm-hmm. even talking about kindergarten and the early primary grades. However, for the sake of most people who talk about early childhood education, and in most conversations, we're talking about children before kindergarten, because mm-hmm. we tend to lump the primary grades in with the public school and public education or private education. But we really are talking about a group of children in very young years and who learn in a way that is somewhat different from children once they've mastered reading and some of the skills that we teach in early childhood that they can go on and use to drive their own learning at an older age.
Mm-hmm. And so this point in, let's talk, a human being's life is really kind of setting the stage for the rest of their academic development, their psychological development. Can you talk briefly about that?
Yeah, it actually even goes to society. What mm-hmm. kind of a society do we build based on what our very young children learn? So it is a very much the base or the foundation for lifelong learning. Because our children at this age are learning how to be citizens, how to be people, and with other people, in groups of people, individually, just in a family, in a school setting. So we work a lot with young children on those skills that build their personality. Well, it's probably not a good word, that build their who they are as much as anything. A lot of their personality comes from their some of the nature. We do nature versus nurture, and it comes from nature and their ability to manage the environment and all of the sensory things that come at them in their life. But what we try to work with our children on is learning the skills that it takes to be a citizen, to be successful, to be independent, to be interdependent with other people.
Well, and something I think I've heard is not all childcare is really equal or even. There's such thing as childcare that's actually detrimental.
Yes, yes. One of the things that our research has taught us, and we have, there is so much research on early childhood education. We've been researching early childhood education for more than 50 years. And in the last 25, I would say, heavily researching early childhood education. Mm-hmm. And especially since we've started to learn so much about brain development, and we know about how pliable the brain is in those early years and how many of the connections that are lifelong are made in those first 5 years. One of the things that we've learned is that really good, high-quality childcare can really be amazing in terms of helping children get a leg up and really be ready to learn. They're kind of born ready to learn, but ready to learn in a more formal setting, I should say. But really poor quality childcare can be also hinder those children in the same way. It can prevent them from developing the, a lot of times we call them executive functions, or business people call them soft skills, the things that we need to be able to do to be a citizen, to be part of something bigger than ourselves, which is communication skills, the ability to self-regulate, to manage your own behavior, the ability to stay on task, the ability to collaborate with others, those kinds of skills that are really developed during those early years. And poor quality childcare doesn't allow for a lot of that to happen because the relationships between adults and children are not very strong sometimes.
Hmm. So poor quality childcare, what would that be like?
It's often, and it's not necessarily on purpose. I will tell you, some places, some child care centers work very hard at doing a good job, but because of low pay, they have high turnover. The most important piece of high quality care and education for young children is the relationship they have with the adults. And if the adults are constantly turning over and you get new people all the time, they never really form that strong bond and that strong relationship that they need with the adults in their space.
Really...
attachment. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we know how important that is. And so in a lot of cases, it's not even necessarily that they don't want to do good things for children. It's that, you know, because of the economic situation. Again, money plays a big part in this any way you go about it. It's just a big deal. But, you know, a lot of child care centers pay minimum wage. And if people can get a better job, they will leave that job to go to something that they may not even love as much as working with children, but it pays better. In Kentucky, unlike Indiana, there are state-funded pre-K programs in all the counties. So we took our Head Start dollars, which are federal dollars, and merged them with the state-funded pre-K dollars to serve more children in those communities. And so we were in 16 counties and 19 different school districts working side-by-side Head Start and public school together to serve at-risk populations, generally speaking, children from low-income families. But also some of the schools had expanded to offer more expanded services to, in some cases, all the children in their county that are 4 years old.
So the situation was a little different over there.
Yes, it was. That's one of the things. And I'm over here because I like the opportunity to build something. And I think Indiana is really beginning to think about how they want to build their early childhood system in their state. Kentucky's been doing it for 23 years, and the system is working well. It's not fully funded. We could certainly serve more children in Kentucky, but in Indiana, at this point in time, there is no funding for state pre-K. What has happened locally is that Evansville School Corporation and the city, Evansville-Vandenberg School Corporation and the city of Evansville and Vandenberg County have really committed to supporting early childhood education. And so in the case of EVSC, we are using some Title I dollars that we can use to serve our at-risk populations for pre-K services. So we serve 3- and 4-year-olds who are Title I eligible, which is basically free and reduced lunch mm-hmm. eligible, up to as many children as we can. And right now we're serving a little over 200 children with those funds and have waiting lists of another 200-300, and there are probably other children out there. We have a lot of families who call and can't get on, you know, they can get on the waiting list, but they don't think they'll ever get in, so they don't even put their name on the list. There are local programs that are privately run, and there are some opportunities that way for some families to get pre-K services. But in the last Kids Count data that comes out annually on each state and each county, in Vandenberg County, only 36% of the children who enter kindergarten have ever been in any kind of early childhood, formal early childhood
program. Only 36%.
Program. Now, that was, of course, that data is always a couple years old. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, it's a little better than that now. But that's a very astonishing state of situation to me, because we know how important those years are, and we know what the children need to have before they start kindergarten to really be successful.
You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 WNIN. Later in the segment, we'll talk to a psychiatrist to hear exactly what's going on in a child's brain in those early years of their life. Support for the program today comes from Rabin Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Rabin offers a selection of tire brands, including Michelin and Goodyear, along with complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at rabintire.com.
And while we're in this position, exchanging definitions, I like a song to keep my memory intact.
And we're back on The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington, and today I'm talking with EVSC's Director of Early Childhood Education, Terry Green.
Well, it sounds like EVSC is really leading the charge.
I mean, they really are. And that's what drew me to the job. I was perfectly happy, you know, serving the people in Kentucky and had done that for many, many years. But the opportunity was here to really begin to build something amazing. And I think Evansville and EVSC and the child care community here and the business community and everyone is really bought into that and will really see some amazing things in the next few years.
Well, how does Evansville compare to cities and around the rest of the state?
Well, I'm just learning that, being new, because I still live in Kentucky, but I am learning. And there are the larger cities do have early childhood systems in place of some sort. Most of the public schools are serving some preschool children in the larger areas. The more rural communities, you're not seeing that at all yet. And it is a funding issue. I mean, not only is there not money coming from the state at all, but there also have been big cuts in the money. Title I has been cut with sequestration. Head Start, which was serving a lot of those children, has been cut for all across the nation. And so those child care resource and referral money has been cut. Child care assistance money, which is money provided to working poor families to provide help them offset the cost of child care so that they can work. That money's been cut. And so there's just not a lot out there. President Obama has introduced in his budget a lot of money for states who will grow their early childhood programs, especially their pre-K programs. Whether or not we see that money come to fruition, we don't know yet, but we're hopeful, and I'm sure that Indiana will take full advantage of it if it becomes available. But it's an economic issue. It's an economic issue on the side of there isn't money to support early childhood. It's also an economic issue on the side of we know that if we invest it now, in the long run, it's going to cost us less down the road. But that doesn't help with finding the money right now. One of the things I must say, and this is just an observation from an outsider new to Evansville, and I know you're new to Evansville as well, is that I am very pleased as an advocate for young children at the quality overall of early care and education in Evansville, Vandenberg area. What I have seen, there is a very strong, the Four C's that I mentioned earlier, the Child Care Resource and Referral Agency, does a wonderful job of supporting early childhood child care programs and preschools that are privately owned. And I think they've done a really good job of building up the quality as best you can with limited funding. And so that is something for Evansville-Vandenberg County area and the surrounding counties to be really proud of.
I keep hearing money, funding. That's definitely the impediment.
What
needs to be, is there something that there's a misunderstanding about early childhood development or is it just not a priority? What needs to change?
Well, in a perfect world, everybody would recognize the importance of it and try to find the money. I think it's a lot of things. I think, first of all, it was interesting. I was just having a conversation with the principal yesterday who was interested in how we could get early childhood started in his building. And we were talking about, I said, you know, you can offset the cost of starting an early childhood program with some of your funds, and down the road, those children will not need as many supportive services. But if you take away from the children who do need the supportive services now to do this on the front end, somebody's going to suffer on the top end who's already missed out on those early childhood opportunities. So refocusing money is very difficult because the need is so great and the pots are so small. Finding additional funding sources is really probably going to be the way it will have to go. And to do it in a big way, it does take government funding. I mean, we have wonderful support in this area, and I've just learned of this group called Ready Nation that is working from an economics standpoint with businesses to support early care and education. But they're not in a position to fund in the global kind of funding way that we need. And it needs to just be built into the educational system. Eventually, I think it will. I've been around a long time, and I started in kindergarten, when kindergarten was where preschool is now. It was in local churches. It was not offered in public school. And, you know, it took a lot of years to get there. And it will take a lot of years to get early childhood for our 4-year-old and younger children fully funded. But I think we're on a good road. I think we're headed that direction. I think if the economy had not sort of fallen behind the last few years, we probably would be farther along than we are. The other thing is to really help shore up families, because these children don't come in isolation, and families have tremendous amount of stress on them in their lives right now. Well, always, but in
the last modern thing they want is to be on another waiting list.
Yes, they do. Well, and they, you know, they're having to make priorities and choices too, and helping families know how incredibly important they are in those younger years, mm-hmm. because as professionals, we can have the children and do what we can do, but they spend much more time with that family, and those families and what they offer their children is so important. And we were talking before we started off air about a little bit about listening to your children and how important it is just to have a conversation with them, to let them tell you about their day, to ask questions, to truly engage them in meaningful conversation. So that's a little thing that you can do in the car, you can do at home before bedtime, you can do in some of your, while you're sitting waiting at soccer practice for the older one with the younger one. There are lots of opportunities to do one little simple thing, which is just talk with your children, not at them, but with them.
Terry, thank you so much for talking with
me. Well, Cass, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
That was a class of 3, 4, and 5-year-olds starting out their morning at Culver Elementary School. I'm Cass Harrington, and you're listening to The Trend. Today we're talking about early childhood development and what goes on in those early years in a person's life. And it turns out there's a lot. Maggie Felton teaches cognitive development at the University of Southern Indiana. She's also worked as a psychologist in school and clinical settings.
So you have a very, I would say, thorough perspective. You've got the psychology, but also, I mean, working directly with kids and parents.
Yes, so. I think that I've been lucky enough to have experiences that really put me in a position where I think I can ask good questions and that I am able to get quite a lot of information.
So. And from being a mother yourself.
Right, I have 5 kids.
Yeah. Wow, mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, I'll say. Yeah. Yeah. So to start, can you tell me a little bit about this term that you use, infant stimulation
program or infant stimulation. What is that when you're talking about stimulating certain parts of the brain in a child?
Well, we know there's been lots and lots of research about brain development in the past 10 to 15 years. And so we know that the brain is developing, of course, before the child's born. And the brain is very plastic, meaning that it can respond to both positive and negative experiences by the architecture of the brain can change in response to that, to any experiences. And we know that the brain is most plastic early in development. So from that, from birth to five, or from before birth, zero to five, then we know that the experiences that the child has, and those experiences are in the context of relationships almost always, that can shape or determine how the brain is wired.
So when we're talking about stimulating parts of the brain, what's an interaction, for example?
Well, for instance, the interaction between, we talk about the synchrony, or the kind of the dance that happens between parent and child. That is, the child seeks that social interaction with a parent, and that social interaction, then the parent responds to that, and if they respond consistently, and if they respond warmly, and they encourage the child then to continue with that interaction, then creates this sort of dance, and that's a kind of stimulation for the child, and it stimulates different areas of the brain. So it stimulates the areas of the brain that process language, but it also stimulates the areas of the brain that will eventually allow the child to regulate themselves. So that child then is learning how to regulate their own emotions in this dance with the parents, as the parents respond to them.
Well, this show is essentially focused on early childhood education and development. So if that's, I would say, what's going on in the realm of the home or relationship with a parent, but what about in terms of education or in child care?
Well, in children who receive high quality child care, those children are advantaged very often, because when they get to kindergarten, not only have the areas of the brain been stimulated that are going to be big players in learning how to read and learning how to add, but also they've been stimulated in the areas of the brain have been stimulated that are going to process information about how to interact with other children in that setting, with other adults in that setting. And they're going to have a better idea and greater skills at regulating their own behavior and their own, especially negative, emotions, so that when they get, if we look at the kids coming to kindergarten, then those children who have experienced that high quality daycare situation then are ready to learn. All children have the brain capacity to learn, but these children are advantaged in that they're not only ready to learn to add and to read, but they're also ready to learn to pay attention. They're going to know how to deal with other children, and they're going to know how to deal with response to authority. So, so really, we're almost creating a two-tier system here. Children who don't have high-quality daycare and the children who do, and who have had for maybe the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I spoke with Terry Green from EVSC, and she mentioned, the executive functions that are essentially being developed. And so that's pretty much setting your track for school, higher education, and career,
which really kind of plays out in adult development, because we know we've followed children who have had high quality daycare and children who have not had high quality daycare, and what we find is the kids who have had high quality daycare are more likely to continue in school, they're more likely to be academically on track, more likely to stay away from substance abuse, more likely to graduate from high school, from college to go on to get jobs and be productive citizens and contribute to our economy.
You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 WNIN and WNIN.org. We're talking about early childhood education, so I thought I'd play you a clip from a pre-K teacher at Culver Elementary. Jared Toch says his approach to managing the classroom is to let students lead discussions and decide on activities with a little guidance.
To know that this is their classroom, not just my classroom, but this classroom belongs to them. And it's to create thinkers that goes beyond just do this, and that they can problem solve on their own. So it's kind of that deeper thinking, level of thinking.
I've broken with the truth. Strange tales I've borrowed. And the grown-ups are like roots. Total jokes, total cowards. And where would we hide? Behind the water tower. All in the graveyard of my
Now back to our conversation with Maggie Felton, a USI professor who teaches cognitive development.
Well, and I understand you are in favor of the concept of universal child care.
Mm-hmm.
What about people's concerns that that's very costly? That's just another chunk of our government budget that is already pretty measly.
Oh, and I'm completely sympathetic to that view. What's been really interesting to me is in the past 15 years, there has been a collaboration between economists and people who are doing work in neuroscience and early child development, and we now have several small studies that that follow children, like the Perry Preschool Project, that followed children on through Perry
40.
Preschool to up to age 40,
yeah.
And the Absiderian Project in North Carolina, and in some of the state schools that are now putting together large projects. And what they generally find is the investment on the front end, that is the investment in high quality, low cost preschool for kids 0 to 5, the return on that investment is somewhere between 7% and 10%. And that's higher than any government program. So
economists agree.
James Heckman up at the University of Chicago, the Nobel laureate in economics, has a site that is dedicated to this kind of research. And really, if you look at some of the work that he's done, he's been able to kind of play that out over the lifespan of the children, and just our savings in the criminal justice system, our savings in special ed, our savings with regard to, or our increase in benefit from people paying taxes and working at jobs.
Or costs from the penal system, I'm sure, too.
Yeah. So, and not only that, but if you manage to do that, if you manage to raise those outcomes for those children who are now living in poverty, then you have, by the time they get to be adults, then they're raising children that are more likely to participate in the economic system. It would be advantageous overall. And we have a huge number of children living in poverty. In the last 25 years, we have seen more children fall into poverty. So it makes good economic sense. But again, it's being able to focus on long-term options long-term outcomes rather than short-term outcomes.
Is this at all related to that concern, or it's almost become like even a political kind of hot button rally cry, if you will, that the dissolving family unit is to blame for poverty or child's behavior? Does that also, does that relate to this conversation?
Well, the Neurons to Neighborhood program that I, or study, was a study that was published really now, It was published in 2000, so it was published 13 years ago, and they continued to update it and revise it. But that really was done in response to changes in the culture, as well as changes in our knowledge about how the brain develops. And some of the recommendations that came out of that particular study, which was a huge study, the changes in culture that we've seen have been really changes in how work is done in this country. So yes, we have more moms that are going to work for one reason or another. So children are no longer staying home with one parent who gave birth and loves them. And but beyond that, the culture has changed in that a lot of skills that children picked up vis-a-vis interacting with parents were picked up when they were engaged in chores with parents. So when kids were helping moms or dads put together cakes from scratch, hanging clothes on the line, they were engaged in conversation, and that conversation was complex conversation. You know, the research that's been done on the number of words that children hear before the age of three is really very striking, in that children who are living in disadvantaged circumstances, where parents may be stressed, where parents maybe have to hold down several jobs, but they're not really interacting with their children as much as people who maybe who have more advantages are, then those children hear on average about 10 million words by the time they get to be, before they get to be 3 years old. But children from working class families who are in high quality daycare and whose parents have enough resources and lower levels of stress hear 33 million words by the time they reach age three. And more complex language as well. Remember, experience wires the brain. So the more experience you have, the more stimulation you have, then the larger the number of neural networks and neural connections there are. So when we were hanging wash with our moms or dads, the longer the stretches of conversation are, the more complex it becomes. So we were having more conversations, and those conversations were longer. So we were getting more stimulation at that time. Now work has changed, and children are spending less time one-to-one with parents.
Are the automatic cuts in federal spending that have affected Head Start and early Head Start programs. What are the implications of this? Do you see, is there going to be an effect that we can see, a marked difference? Or
there will be an effect, I believe. I mean, because we're cutting services, so fewer children are getting services. And unless the community steps up and picks up those children and provides them with high quality daycare, then we are going to see an effect, and we're going to see it when those children are adults. So we're going to see it 20 years from now when those children are having their children.
And we're talking about here in Indiana, that's almost 57,000
yes,
children.
It's a tremendous amount. And those children are our future. I mean, they are a huge portion of Indiana's future. And I know that other countries are astounded when they look at us and they see we're not investing in our primary resource, and that is early childhood. That could affect our economy 20 years from now.
And what countries are doing the best or kind of ahead of the game in terms of this?
Most of the Western industrialized countries have some sort of, I refer to it as universal child care. It's low cost, often subsidized child care that is high quality, that has very definite standards of care in place, and an overarching agency that makes sure that the childhood opportunities and experiences are consistent across the socioeconomic groups. Mm-hmm. So we see that in France, we see it in England, we see it in Germany, even Italy, mm-hmm. we see it in China. China is the most recent mm-hmm. country to jump on the bandwagon. So, you know, if we're worried about our ability to compete economically, then we probably should be worried if we're cutting our services to that group, those children.
So what's the solution here? What's the first step to addressing early childhood education?
We need to pay attention to that collaboration between the economists mm-hmm. and the academicians, the researchers. There's a huge now information knowledge base in that area. And I think if people are so concerned with the economy, then okay, then, and if they're skeptical about brain development, all right, mm-hmm. then look at what the economists have to say. Mm-hmm. And I think that you see that they're on the same page. They're on the same page.
You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 and online at WNIN.org. Still to come, we'll hear from a mother who practices music therapy at home and at work with her kids. She'll show us how she uses instruments to help develop conversation and coping skills. And speaking of conversations with kids, we're going to shift gears for a few minutes and hear from Tony Voss about raising his Batman-loving 3-year-old daughter. I'm with WNIN's own Tony Voss. I typically don't interview my coworkers, but I think you very much are part of this story. Tony's been updating his Facebook status with little strokes of genius from his daughter, Lily, she's 3 years old?
Yes.
Yeah. And so I wanted to hear from you as a first-time parent, I guess, how you interact with your daughter and what's it like? Who's driving the ship?
Not me. I know that's certain.
It seems like there's just never a dull moment at home.
It's never dull, and I'm fairly certain I'm never in control. The best thing that I can ever do is point her in the direction of what I want mm-hmm. and really hope that she gets the point. If it's sort of a good intention thing, like I want her to do what I ask because it's the best thing for her, mm-hmm. I have to just kind of nudge her in that direction. Wouldn't it be a good idea to do this? Yeah.
He's making a fist.
Yeah.
No.
That nudge is blunt and knuckle shaped. But then also that works in the standpoint of, sometimes I just want to see how our mind works mm-hmm. in the standpoint of, what do you think about that?
Wow.
Like, I might be watching something on TV and I realize that she doesn't understand the context. And I want to understand what that means to her. Mm-hmm. Not having the context, because television and pop culture assumes a common ground.
Yeah, that you've been alive for the past
yeah.
so
yeah.
many years.
Good versus evil uh-huh. understands that I know certain things. What good is, what evil is, mm-hmm. the princess must be saved, things like that. She has none of that. She's a blank slate. So if these things are playing on certain tropes and she doesn't have them, she's making up the story as she goes along. And that's astonishing to me. And I want to know what that story is. Because that story is fascinating. The story on TV is boring to me uh-huh. in comparison to that story.
Wait, I mean, where does this come from? Because the interviews I've had, we're talking to, like, you know, specialists in the field, and they're all saying, do this. Have these interactions with your kids. So where does this passion or curiosity come from? Or, I mean,
it's like you're just a fabulous parent.
No, I'm sure it's completely misdirected. It's my desire to watch a small child say funny things I can put on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give myself too much credit. Mm-hmm. I mean...
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is the one of the biggest things you can do for a child, aside from quality childcare, which I know Lily's enrolled in Montessori, that's excellent. In the home, just listening and valuing what they have to say is so important to stimulating different parts of their brain. And I mean, you do that very well.
I was always concerned when I knew, from the moment I knew I was going to be a parent, one of my first priorities in my head, and I don't know if I ever voiced it out loud, but certainly in my head, was that this was always going to be the person that she wanted to be and not the person I wanted her to be. I mean, she likes Batman now.
Wow.
And I don't know if I did that to her. But I know I gave that to her. Mm-hmm. I said, this is Batman. This is what Batman does. And if I didn't do that, she wouldn't like Batman. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I don't think I made her like Batman.
My last question, since this is the trend, let's see if I'm not trying too hard here. Do you think that with Facebook, this is what got me started on this idea?
No.
Is parenting different because of Facebook?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Yeah? Oh, so I'm on, there is a
yeah,
trend.
Well, because I know I'm concerned. I do it still some, but like, I don't like putting her picture up on there. Mm-hmm. Some of my friends put her pictures up there because they take pictures of her sometimes.
Mm-hmm. How do you approach that?
Are
you
I don't want to be like, your Facebook page is off limits to pictures of my daughter. I can't really do that. But like, my page, I don't really put pictures of her up.
Does Lily know about Facebook? Does she know she has like a little fan club, aka me?
No, I don't tell her about it. But no, I mean, it's scary in a lot of ways. As far as telling people about stuff she does, it's fun now, but I see a way where if she gets older, she might get mad at me about it. That, like, she might be like, you told all these people that I said X, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, well, you were cute and you were a kid. And she'll probably hate me for it.
But I think she'll thank you in 20 years.
In 20 years, she'll thank me. In 10 years, she'll hate me.
Are you going to hold on to those and maybe show her later?
Maybe, if Facebook exists in that long. Yeah. She'll be a teenager. She'll find some reason to hate me. If it's not that, it's something else.
Well, for now, enjoy the three-year-old.
Oh, yeah, I will.
Batman-loving three-year-old.
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, Tony, thank you for talking to me about parenthood.
Yeah, no problem.
That was me talking to Tony Voss, WNIN's host of All Things Considered. I'm Cass Harrington, and we've reached our final stop here on The Trend. Now we'll talk to Rachel Maurer, a mother who is also a professional music therapist. Rachel leads workshops for parents called Parenting Counts. I stopped by her house to learn about the curriculum she teaches and to hear how she uses music to connect with her three-year-old daughter and infant son.
So I have to point out that we're joined by Anya?
Anya.
And how old is Anya?
She's three.
You're three? You want to talk too? You can talk.
You want to talk? No.
we'll have a whole separate interview for her. the ideas that you're introducing in this parenting counts program, is it all things that... She's going to give us some percussion here.
Yeah.
are they all ideas and concepts that, you know, that happen at home that parents can incorporate into their parenting?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's about talking with your kids. Because kids spend a lot of time in daycare and they spend a lot of time at school, and that's okay. But they also spend a lot of time at home with their parents and their siblings, probably. So, and you're the first person as a parent that they know in their life. And so they probably take most of their cues from you. So, even if their teacher tells them something, you know, you're the person that they probably are looking to.
And part of that is talking and being interested in what they're saying.
Yeah, and it's hard to, when you come home from work and your child wants to talk to you about everything they did at school. It's hard to stop and listen, but yeah, it's a lot of talking and a lot of letting them talk, a lot of explaining why things happen, you know, why did this girl at school do this, and why are you saying this, or why did you tell daddy that, and there's a lot of questions when they're three, but that's because they're learning.
Part of your instruction, part of your coursework involves this curriculum, but also you're drawing from experience as a mother. So what kind of observations or scenarios do you incorporate when you're guiding a workshop?
Just little things that come up. Even as I was reading through the curriculum, I was reading and thinking, oh, I've done that before, or that's happened to me, and this is what I did, or this is what I should have done. There's things that I think will just kind of come up, and every day I learn something new, and it reminds me of the stuff that I'm teaching, so I think it'll kind of just go together.
Well, so for this program, we're focusing on early childhood development, you know, pre-K, and what's going on in that point in a human's life. And I know your curriculum touches on kind of social things, mm-hmm. like coping with emotions. And can you tell me a little bit about that? Why is that important?
Well, kids learn to cope with things based on how you react. So if you get angry and you throw things, then chances are your kids are going to learn that way. So it's also important for us to watch how we deal with things, whether it's our frustration or anger, you know, how you interact with other people in your home, because that's how they learn to do it. So a lot of it is training yourself to be good role models for your kids to follow, because if they don't have a positive model to model in their house, it's really hard for them to learn that on their own.
Well, and you you were telling me too about like the importance of making time out like a neutral experience. What does that relate to?
I think when I started doing time out, I was thinking of time out as, you know, almost like a discipline technique, and in a way I guess it is, but I don't think it has to be. I think it's, if you give yourself time out, you know, if you were angry and you took some time to cool off and you went outside, took a walk, read a book, or did something else, I mean, that would be kind of like your time out. But kids don't know how to do that, so I guess we put a name to it and we call it time out, and it's a bad thing. And but I don't think it has to be. So what we've tried to do with her is to talk about how mommy and daddy take timeouts too, and this is what we do, and that it's okay. It doesn't mean she's in trouble. It just means she needs some time to unwind.
How do you feel about that, Anya? Do you like timeout?
It's not quite worked as the way I've envisioned it, but we're working on that now.
Let's talk about music therapy, and if you want, we could pull in some instruments.
Right now, what we're doing lately is a silly song. Sometimes when Anya gets fussy, which happens sometimes, right? She's just going to stare at me.
She denies it.
Yeah. We've started, you know, we usually try to do something silly just to get her mind off of it, and so we'll sing a silly song or make something up. Usually I just make it up. In the music therapy world, we call that a piggyback song. I just make it up and just sing it, and she thinks it's funny, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but lately she's been coming up and saying, "Mommy, I'm fussy, I can't stop fussing, sing me a silly song." So then we have to do the silly stuff. And we've talked about using my djembe, my drum, if she needs to go in there and just kind of chill out and not be angry. She works on that with that. And sometimes I'll catch her in there playing my piano. Mm-hmm.
She's smiling. Yeah. And that helps.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And mm-hmm. the fact that she asks for it now is kind of cool, because mm-hmm. she can recognize that she's frustrated or angry or fussy or whatever that is to her, and she'll come up and tell me that.
She'll...
You're going to play us a pretty song on the piano.
I'm looking forward to
that. That would be awesome. Yeah.
So she'll do it on her own out of like self-awareness that, okay, mm-hmm. I need to calm down.
Which is kind of what you want it to be, you know, to cross over into everyday living. Even when she was little, I used to play, get my guitar out, and she would sit in a bouncer and I would play the way that she would bounce. So if she was bouncing fast, I would play fast, and she'd bounce even faster. And then when she would stop, I would stop. And so we kind of did this play back and forth where she knew, it was almost like a conversation. Like, she knew I was listening to her and I was reflecting back what she was doing in the bouncer. And another way to do that too, as I get older, is to get instruments out and take turns playing, you know, pretend you're talking with an instrument.
So did music therapy come before being a mom, or did one inspire the other?
No, music therapy came first. I went to school for that. I had my bachelor's and my master's in music therapy, and I actually was finishing my, I wrote my thesis the first year of her life, so that's kind of always been in the background. And then as I go on growing in the process, I've learned to use things in just home life, and, you know, whether it's even just listening to music in the morning. Sometimes if she wakes up grouchy, then I put some music on in the bedroom while we're getting ready, and that kind of helps set the mood a little bit.
Anya, do you want to show me your piano?
You want to play some piano?
Make some pictures.
When do you play piano?
But sometimes when I'm sad, I play it.
Yeah? Does it help you feel better? Why does it help you feel better?
Because I play it.
It's so profound.
Mom has a lot of instruments.
What do you want to play today?
This.
Okay.
Can you do it this?
I'll show you. Take this stick here. It's not really a stick, but we'll call it a stick. I think choices is a good thing, too, because they don't have a lot of control over things, so anytime I can give her a chance to make a choice is good. You want me to play this? Talk back.
Huh?
Talk back to me with your... Music therapy really is almost a way of life, because it's, you can't really be a musician and not have that be a big part of your outside life. It's not a 9-to-5 job where you know, you come home and that's it for the day. It's just kind of, I mean, I've been playing the piano since I was 7, so I've spent over half my life. Yes?
What can you do with it?
I've spent over half my life, you know, involved in music, so it's just a part of what I do.
And is this something, you know, any parent could do and incorporate at home?
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily be music therapy, but it can be helpful. And these are games that you can do with your kids that I think they would like. They wouldn't even know they were working on anything, because they enjoy playing instruments and being loud, right? Do you like to be loud? Yeah.
A lot of this workshop is oriented toward first-time parents. Is there a particular message or focus that you have for them?
This isn't an all-or-nothing thing. It doesn't, you know, I'm not a perfect mom. Nobody's a perfect mom. It's just you do the best you can, and if you didn't do what you thought you should have done before, then maybe the next day you get back up and you try to do it that way that day. And I think it's a process.
That was music therapist Rachel Maurer. And I'm Cass Harrington. We've reached the end of today's trend, but as always, the conversation doesn't end here. Tweet us at our Twitter handle, TheTrendTalks. We're also on Facebook and Tumblr, where you can find photos and extra content from the interviews on today's show. If you want more information about a person or project mentioned on today's program, visit the Trends page at WNIN.org. There you can also find the list of songs I played on this show. Thanks for listening. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. This episode was produced by myself, with help from Ryan Reynolds at the Courier and Press. Tony Voss provides production support, and the theme music was written by the talented Jeffrey Osmond. I'm Cass Harrington. This is WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.